think, you know, this is a frustration which comes up through the Human Rights Council because, you know, of the inability of dealing with Israel in the Security Council, where the U.S. Is always minded to exercise its veto if there is anything which amounts to very significant criticism of Israel. You know, I was working for Kofi Annan when he was Secretary General, when we managed to get the resolution, famous resolution, which had declared that Zionism is racism, an absolutely abhorrent thing. We got it, you know, we were able to get it rescinded, we were able to get Israel properly ensconced in the different member state groups, and it was a period where we managed to kind of do a lot to heal that terrible wound, the exceptional treatment that Israel had been given. But of course, you know, unfortunately, 10 years of a gang elapsed and there's been no progress on the Middle East. The Palestinians and their allies continue to feel frustrated by the lack of support within the Security Council. And because of that, use stratagems which do no credit to the organization of using the Human Rights Council and other UN bodies as, you know, an alternative place to express their frustration and, and anger at the lack of progress.
As they do. I mean, you know, Israel gets criticized more than North Korea, plus Saudi Arabia, plus, well, every single other country in the world. And I do think that for fair-minded people, that rather puts it in a bad odor. You said it's not ready to retire, and I think if we did try to invent a new one, we'd have exactly the same political problems as we have. What is the future for the UN? Can it be reformed? And has it got enough money?
Well, look, there is a process of reform which, in a sense, you know, continues as constantly efforts to rationalize bits of the UN which have been, you know, ossified in some ways for decades. At the moment, there's an effort to reform the humanitarian side. There'll be an effort in Paris in December around the climate change conference there to kind of do some stuff to make the UN more effective in certain ways. So there's a continuous process of evolutionary change, but, you know, I think we are entering into a period where the fundamental issue is that unless the political climate, global political climate, changes dramatically, we're likely to have a period of confrontation in global politics, which will lead to, again, a period of inertia and gridlock and deadlock in the Security Council. But I do think the development, and most particularly the humanitarian sides, will in a sense de-link from that and do very good and growing work. The resources is always an issue. I mean, we're in a period where the efforts to, you know, Britain is a remarkable leader in providing very significant amounts of development assistance and support to the UN. Many others don't come anywhere near matching it, and it's hard to see in this economic climate that they're going to anytime soon. So I think what you will have to see is in a period of innovation where the private sector comes much more engaged, which means that a lot of things which have been funded by public grants will in future need to be funded by private investment, and the UN's going to have to work out how to adjust and embrace that.
Clearly, we're not in 1945. Clearly, the Security Council reflects the countries that won the Second World War, and it still reflects that. Do you agree it is time to extend the Security Council, including how many permanent members it has?
I do. I mean, when I was there, a rather wry Italian ambassador who opposed a plan that to include new members, who included Germany and Japan, famously observed, well, we lost the Second World War too, so why shouldn't we be included? Because there was this sense that, as you say, it was the victors, the allies of the Second World War, who indeed, during their campaign, had even called themselves the United Nations, who brought that political structure and victory wholesale into the formation of the organization. And so, yes, the Security Council needs to be expanded.
But it's not going to happen, is it? I mean, you mentioned Japan there. I mean, because immediately China would veto it, and apparently, if you change the Security Council, apparently I've read, and you will know, it's something to do with changing the charter of the UN that requires unanimity in the Security Council. China would say, "I'm not having Japan in." So, is it frozen in time?
Well, that was what happened last time. There were all those kinds of blockages. China didn't even need to show its hand on that because the rest of Latin America resented the idea that Brazil would be the permanent member from there. Pakistan was bitterly opposed, as were other South Asian countries, to India's inclusion. Africa couldn't agree which country or countries should be its new permanent representatives. But the other bit that will have to change is how people use the veto, how issues are brought to the UN, to the Security Council, what are the range of actions available to the Security Council to enforce its will. So, it's more than just membership. It's what's available to it in terms of sanctions and solutions to problems, and its willingness to grip problems, even when, like Israel, certain members are very opposed to action.
Finally, Mark, I could easily list you 10 horrific failures of the United Nations. Can you give me what you think its greatest achievement is?
Well, partly being there after 70 years, that there's still a place that all the nations of the world meet, and whatever their differences, engage. Their diplomats not just engage across the floor of the General Assembly, but in the coffee shops and bars and in other informal groupings. And just imagine how much more dangerous a world it would be, if we lost that. But the second thing I'd equally say is these Millennium Development Goals and all that's gone with them, the elimination of some real killer diseases, the saving of tens of millions of lives, these are an extraordinary testament to just what the world can do when it does decide to collaborate, just as the failures attest to the high costs of putting national, often cynical political interests ahead of solving global problems.